Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke.
We're a couple of swells. We stop at the best hotels, but we prefer the country far away from the city smell. We're a couple of sports, the pride of the tennis courts. In June, July, and August, we look cute
when we're dressed in shorts.
That was Carol Burnett with her eldest of three daughters, Carrie, in the 1980s television series Fame. Carrie was a series regular, and Carol joined the program as a guest star. In 2002, Carrie died of cancer. The new book, Carrie and Me, is Carol Burnett's poignant tribute to her late daughter and a funny and moving memoir about mothering an extraordinary young woman through the struggles and triumphs of her life. Sharing her personal diary entries, photographs, and correspondence, Carol traces the journey she and Carrie took through some of life's toughest challenges. Carol Burnett, thank you so much for joining us on the Roundtable.
Well, thank you, Sarah.
The subtitle of the book is A Mother-Daughter Love Story, which I thought was so beautifully put and appropriate. What is so special to you about that very specific relationship between a mother and a daughter?
The bond that happened and, you know, the love and the respect that we wound up having for each other.
How old were your daughters when you could tell that they realized they were living a pretty unique existence being Carol Burnett's daughters?
Well, actually, we lived in a neighborhood and the girls went to school. Several of their friends' parents were in show business.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think they thought anything about it, you know, because that was all they knew. And my middle daughter's best friend at one point was Dean Martin's daughter. So, you know, it's not like when I was a kid, because we were very, very, very poor. So when I started to make some money, by that I mean $200 a week in New York, I was absolutely thrilled, so that I saw the difference between when I was a little kid and then when I was starting to make my way in show business and earn then very good money. So I knew the difference. I don't think kids born who have parents who can provide for them in a nice way, I don't think they see any difference unless they go downhill after they're older, you know?
Mm-hmm. Your daughters were born and were around, were young when you were doing your television show.
Right.
And this question is, of course, one for all working parents, but how did you manage and balance your family and your professional life?
Sarah, I was raised in the business. I was raised doing live television.
Mm-hmm.
So we built our schedule, we made it kind of like a school schedule. At one point, I was asked how many hours a week did I work, and it was 30, which is like a part-time job.
Right.
But see, not every parent has the luxury that I had. I totally understand that. But what we did was sometimes I would take the kids to school, and I would be finished rehearsing, you know, in the afternoon, and I could go by the school and pick them up. And we had weekends off. We had a week at Easter. We had 2 weeks at Christmas. Every 4 weeks, we had a week off. And, of course, all the summers. So it was really a school schedule that we had. And every night was dinner at 6 o'clock with the kids. And the only night we weren't home was the night that we taped on Friday. But then we taped two shows, so they would come to the first show, and you know, when they were old enough, and see what Mom and Dad did, you know. And so I was very fortunate. Not everybody. I can't advise, you know, what it's like to be a working mother where you don't have that luxury. I totally appreciate what people are going through, and you know, my heart goes out to how difficult it really must be.
I didn't know your daughter, so I hope you don't mind if I just call her Carrie throughout
the... Oh, of course.
Okay. It just seems so familiar, although I do feel, of course, like I know her from reading the book.
Thank you.
When she was a teenager, she struggled with addiction and you had to send her to rehab. Could you talk about what you learned from that time and what influence you think it had on your relationship with her for the rest of her life?
Well, it was only 3 years out of her 38 years on this earth. But it was a rough 3 years because teenagers are difficult no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
But Carrie had always been the most popular girl in school and got all A's. And it wasn't until she was around 14, her grades started to slip. She sprouted up. She was skinny as a rail and tall and stringy hair and braces on her teeth. And so she thought she was ugly. She lost her self-esteem. And I said, sweetheart, don't worry. You're going to turn into a butterfly. You'll be fine. But I chalked it up, Sarah, to her attitude and slipping grades and stuff. At first, I was very naive. I chalked it up to, well, she's going through puberty.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that would be what you would initially think. But it got worse. And she got very sullen, which was a total opposite of who Carrie was. She was always up and funny and smiling. And she got very, very sullen and didn't want to interact with her sisters and certainly not her parents. My husband and I started to suspect something, and I snooped, and I think it's okay to snoop when you're worried about your child. I snooped in her room, and I found some marijuana hidden away in a shoe, and I was devastated, and I was scared. What I was scared of my own daughter. I was afraid to come down hard on her because I was afraid I would send her over the edge even more. And so it was like I wanted her to love me. I wanted to, you know, that love would pull us through, that she would quit on her own and all, you know, and being very naive. And I wanted her to love me. Well, they don't. They don't love anything but the drug.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually, they're hostile towards anybody else, the parents especially. So she hated me. It was the drugs inside that hated me. I knew it wasn't Carrie because Carrie just wasn't in there. And so finally we put her into a rehab, and she did well for a few months and then slipped again. And that just, I mean, I was, oh, God, devastated again. And this time, though, I realized she's got to go back. She didn't want to go back into, I sent her to a new, I was going to put her in a new rehab here in California. I knew she didn't want to go, so I kind of tricked her into getting in there. She was 17, so I still had, you know, I had custody of her and everything until she was 18. So she called me every name in the book, so angry with me.
Mm-hmm.
And this time, it didn't bother me. I thought, well, I'm her mother, and I have to love her enough to let her hate me. I'm not her best friend. I'm her mother, you know. And I put my foot, and that was it. And she went through the sessions for 30 days, and then we all went to family week with other families where we talk about with the addict. And this time it took. So after that, Carrie came back. She came back, and she forged a wonderful career for herself. And she was enrolled in Pepperdine University, and she got the lead in several of their plays, including Barefoot in the Park. And then she went on to write and sing her own music, and then she did television guest shots, and she did a movie, a cult film now. It was called Tokyo Pop.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, she won really rave, wonderful reviews. And I thought, oh, my God, you know, she's really doing well. And Marlon Brando called her and wanted to talk to her about a project that he was going to do, and she turned him down. And I became a stage mother.
Sure.
And I said, Carrie, you know, these opportunities aren't always going to be there for you. I mean, are you nuts? She said, Mom, I don't care about being a star or being famous. I just want to do everything. I want to sing. I want to write my music now. After I do that, I want to write. I want to direct. I want to do all of it. And I don't care about being famous. I just want to do what makes me happy. And I just thought, wow, that is really quite wonderful, you know, and that's what she did.
It's a clarity of vision and priority that is not common, certainly.
No, especially with young people.
Mm-hmm.
I think she was older than what she was, you know what I mean? She had a very wonderful outlook on life. One of her correspondence with me was, she said, Mom, I feel joy on a daily basis. And that's who she was. And she would talk about, I don't know why people don't smile more. She says, you walk into a room and you smile and the world opens up to you. That's who she was.
You mentioned the correspondence, and a lot of the book features email correspondence between Carrie and yourself. And her emails are so expansive and beautifully written. They make me feel pretty guilty about the two-sentence missives I shoot off to my parents. But it must mean so much to you to have them.
I'm so happy. I saved everything. I saved our correspondence. She took a road trip because she was writing a story about a bohemian girl, young girl named Kate, who's not unlike Carrie herself, who takes a road trip to Graceland with a mysterious cowboy. And she decided that she would take that road trip herself to soak up the vibes and do research and so forth. Mm-hmm. So she got in her Jeep and left from Hollywood and drove all the way down to Memphis by herself and would fire off these emails to me about people she met and places she went on the way. And then she would send me also scenes from Sunrise in Memphis, her story. So when she was diagnosed with lung cancer, mm-hmm. and she was in the hospital for the last time, and she asked me, because she had the beginning of the story, part of the middle, and the ending of Sunrise in Memphis, and she asked me if I could finish it for her, the middle part. And I said, sweetie, I don't know. They're your characters to write. I really don't know if I could do it justice. And she said, well, that's okay, you know. And so her request had been living with me for 10 years. And I thought, well, I couldn't finish her story. I really couldn't. I'm not good with novels, say, or story, making up stuff.
Uh-huh.
So I thought, well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to write about our relationship, my take on her as not only a daughter, but a human being, from the time she was born up through the rough years, and then on, she and I almost became joined at the hip, and we wrote a Broadway show together, which made it to Broadway with Harold Prince directing. I mean, we did a lot of things together, too. I thought, I'm just going to write about that, and then I'm going to put part two, I'm just going to put her unfinished story at the end of the book, and I just hope that I've succeeded in bringing her essence to the page, because she was quite thoughtful. She meditated on a lot of stuff, and she had a wonderful outlook on life. In fact, when she was in the hospital, I remember walking down the hall one day towards her room, and the nurse stopped me, and she said, I just have to tell you something about your daughter. And I said, what?
Mm-hmm.
She said, she cheers us up. And I asked Carrie, she said, how come she's so cheerful all the time? And Carrie's response was, every day I wake up and decide, and that's the key word, Sarah, decide.
Mm-hmm.
Every day I wake up and decide, today I'm going to love my life.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So you just said her request to you to finish the story was weighing on you.
Yes.
And when you decided to put it out the way you have,
mm-hmm.
do you feel better?
Yes.
Good.
Yes. All the time I was writing it, I felt, it was like I felt Carrie on my shoulder, you know, that I just felt her presence in my heart and on my shoulder while I was writing it. It was almost, I heard her say, good, Mom, go for it. And so it was not difficult to write in the way of even talking about her illness. There was an optimism that she had that I wanted to convey to the reader, just who she was, because she was quite a force.
The idea of legacy was one of those things she meditated on a lot.
Yes. Yeah.
Carrie's cancer went undiagnosed for a while.
Yes.
And as you and your family went through her illness with her, did you learn anything that could help other people with, or do you just want to emphasize the importance of early detection?
definitely early detection. And first they thought it was acid reflux, and then they thought called Giardia, and this and that. And she was in a little town in Colorado. She had a little cabin there that she wrote from.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept saying, Carrie, you've got to get a second opinion. You know, don't just go with this one doctor, because he thought it was acid reflux, and now he thinks it's something else. Go to Boulder, Colorado, where they're better doctors or whatever. And finally, though, it got to the point where she realized she had to come out to California. But get a second opinion. Get a third opinion, you know. And or if it's early detection, that's the best way to catch it, because the tumor had gotten to be the size of a baseball by the time we got her out to California.
I am hoping in the last few minutes we have here that you will share a story from early in the book, but I don't know how to ask you to share it without giving away the punchline, which I don't want to do.
The story about her telling a fib?
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay. Well, she was about 5 or 6, and her father and I caught her in a fib. Couldn't have been a big lie or anything, because she was so young. Mm-hmm. But still, after dinner, we sent her up to her room, and I went in to tuck her in, and she was crying, and I sat on the bed, and I said, sweetheart, your daddy and I, we love you, but we don't like what you did. And so I decided I would just get into this whole riff on what it's like, you know, to tell the truth, and, you know, we'll always love you, and we can work it out. And as I was talking about this, my face was getting closer and closer to hers, so we were almost at one point nose to nose. And she was looking at me very intently. I thought, oh, boy, I'm really getting through to her. Darling, whenever you lie, you know, that's not good, and we will always love you, and da-da-da. And I swear, I talk about that, I thought, well, I'm just wonderful, because she is glued to me. I said, I'm going to get a medal for Mother of the Year, you know. And she's just, I don't think she blinked. She was just staring me very, very intently. Finally, after 10 minutes of waxing on like that, I looked at her and I said, now, sweetheart, is there anything you want to ask me? And she said, oh. And I said, what, darling? Anything? What? She said, how many teeth do you have? She had been counting my teeth. Trying to count my teeth the whole time. I was thinking, oh, my God, I heard violins in the background. I was so wonderful. But that's a true, wonderful story. I love it.
I loved it, too. Carol, thank you very much for joining me. And
thank you, Sarah.
For putting the book together and sharing it with the world.
Thank you.
Carrie and Me is Carol Burnett's tribute to her daughter. It is published by Simon & Schuster. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.